I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by Axis. I'm pleased to welcome Axis executive Tracy Maynard back to the podcast for a discussion on IT spending in South Africa. Tracy, it's good to see you again.
Thanks, Duncan.
So Gartner, the international research and consulting firm, recently put out a report that was perhaps surprisingly upbeat on growth in the IT sector in South Africa. In fact, it said South Africa will finish the year as the fourth fastest growing major IT market in the world, behind only India, Israel, and Singapore, which is quite remarkable given the state of our economy. Specifically, it said IT spending in South Africa will total 303.5 billion rand in 2019, and that's growth of 3.9% in an economy that is, as we know, barely growing. Pretty amazing number, all things considered. Does it square with reality?
Well, when I read that, I thought I've got to respond, right? And that's kind of why we wanted to chat to you, was because we some parts of our business, we're seeing an absolute upbeat, positive spin towards this thing called cloud, and then we have the traditional part of a distributor's business, which is the hardware stuff.
Yeah.
And I think the hardware stuff, and the reason I use the word stuff, is because it's become like a commodity. You can buy it pretty much anywhere. And that part of our business continues to grow despite the press that we read and despite what our partners are telling us. In fact, in September, we ran a channel survey. And what the channel survey said is that the outlook is somewhat more negative than it was a year ago.
Okay.
So the partners are not convinced that hardware is maybe necessarily the only way to go. What we have seen a big uptake in is on the cloud side in our software business. Mm-hmm. And this is an Axis interview. And the exciting thing about Axis is the scope of our business and our offerings to our partners. So I can absolutely concur that we are seeing growth. That's quite a staggering number. I think the challenge for us as a 30-year-old business based in South Africa is we have a reliance as well on our African business across the continent.
Yeah.
And if you had to ask me about growth on the continent, my words to you would be probably outside of South Africa,
mm-hmm.
Not necessarily only in South Africa.
So both, in other words.
So a bit of both. I think the interesting thing about the Africa business is there's certainly appetite for cloud and software technology. If it's not vendor-driven, it's partners and customers saying, tell me about this thing called cloud and how you can help me change my business.
Yeah.
And our role as a distributor is to facilitate a mechanism for our partners to offer technology in the cloud to their customers. So it sounds really simple when I say it like that. I think the challenge really is how does one fund business from Africa into a South African entity and still try and make money? The challenge in Africa is enormous. There are 54 countries on the continent. And the hardest part about how we make money, because let's get real, that's why we're all here, is to try and make money, is to understand how different the cloud model is when you've had a long legacy of selling hardware, where you know if I sell 20,000 notebooks, for example, in a quarter, my return will be X, and the cloud value is almost disproportionate to what you could get on a hardware device. So there's been a lot of thinking that's had to change. There's been a lot of partners that have had to change how they've traditionally done business and realize that if you're not talking about cloud in some way or shape or form with your end customer, you might be left behind.
So we've seen a lot of investment, a lot of announced investment, and Microsoft, for one, has invested a considerable amount of money building two Azure data centers in South Africa, one here in Gauteng and one in Cape Town. Amazon has announced plans to do something similar, and other international vendors are also building data centers, putting down data center infrastructure in anticipation of strong demand, strong growing demand from corporate South Africa. Is that what's underpinning the growth that we're seeing here, or is there something broader to it?
I think there's some merit in that comment. I think there are some government institutions, in particular in the state-owned enterprises, where they still want to have their data on the continent, and Microsoft, I think, was under a lot of pressure to try and facilitate that. Right now, the data centers that we use for our region is in Dublin, and that's considered off-continent, I think, if you picture the map. And there's some companies that insist on having their data on the continent. So I think there's a bit of both. There's a bit of how do we offer you something to give you the comfort that we can have something locally, and you will still have the security and compliance part that we know is a big part of what these companies expect from a vendor like Microsoft.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is just assuring the continent that we are mature enough and able enough and sophisticated enough to deal with having our own data centers on the continent. And that's really facilitated through the partner network. It's facilitated through Microsoft's ongoing quest to make sure that the cloud is available to every partner and every customer whenever they want it.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the hardware side of things, and Gartner specifically said in its research report that there is growth in 2020 certainly is going to moderate as a result of poor demand in the consumer devices segment, which I guess means things like smartphones and PCs and printers. Do you think the growth we're seeing in the services side, the software side, the cloud side of things, is going to underpin continued growth in the sector going forward? Do you think that there's enough demand there and enough interest amongst corporate South Africa and entities elsewhere on the continent to sustain continued growth in the IT sector in South Africa?
I think growth is why vendors invest and why people invest on the continent. If we're not going to grow in the consumer space, I think the challenge then is how do we make that available? So Microsoft offers things like Office 365 for home and small business users. And the rationale behind that is you don't have to be a big, huge corporate to have access to Microsoft cloud products. Mm. And I think from a consumer point of view, if I talk to students, if I talk to any child that's finished matric and in the first 3 years of the university career, is they know that Microsoft products are available through a thing called Mahala.com. And that means that anywhere in the world I am, and I'm a student, and I've got a student ID, I can get Office products for free. So what they're trying to encourage is people that are working their way through a degree 3 or 4 years and they enter the workplace, is that technology becomes a brand and a vendor product they want to use and associate in their corporate career. Mm-hmm. And I think Microsoft's responsibility is to make sure that their products are available. I think consumers are, at that age, are clear of what they want. And a lot of that consumer drive we're finding comes from outside of South Africa. We have some markets that have been particularly strong for us, and I just want to share that the reason we think we've got it right is just from a customer relationship point of view.
Mm-hmm. You represent 36 software vendors at Axis. Where is the demand coming from a software perspective? Which segments of the software space are doing well, and maybe which aren't doing so well?
Well, security is doing exceptionally well. If I look back in the last 18 months, security has been one of our fastest growing business units at Axis. That includes security brands, and I think there's maybe some confusion about what cloud means, and there's this violent understanding of security. And what I always encourage our reseller partners to do is, if you're not sure what you want to specialize in, security would be a great place to start. So security has done really well for us. And the second one, of course, is virtualization. And it's maybe not a new concept. I think technically it's been around for some time. What we're seeing, though, is a lot of interest around how does one take all of these virtualized products and put them in a place as an IT manager in a company that you can make sense of all of it and make sure that what you're paying for is what you're getting.
Yeah, and in many respects, it's a key component of any company's cloud journey is to really get a handle on all these systems, and virtualization helps you do that before you even begin to pull the trigger on perhaps moving some of your processes into the public cloud system.
And what's been particularly positive, and what we've seen certainly in South Africa, is there's definitely a requirement to have a bit of both. And hybrid is not a model that is unusual for South African corporate organizations. I think that's clear. And I think that's because a lot of stuff that they want to keep on-prem is their company information and stuff that they don't want to share. And then there's an aspect of every business you could move to the cloud, stuff that you're not too worried about. And if you are worried about it, keep that on-prem. But hybrid's been particularly popular in South Africa. And brands, from a security point of view, have done really well from some of the on-prem stuff. And virtualization has been that stepping stone really across some of our really big brands to help that customer migrate gradually without feeling like, you know, I'm too terrified to take the step and who helps me? Mm. Because that's the question that often comes to us as a distributor is, how are you going to help me do this?
Yes.
And we've invested skills in building a practice that includes services to encourage our partners to not be scared. And we've done the investment on their behalf. And in the case of Microsoft, the CSP program is a program where we facilitated licensing and some guidance for partners and taking that expense on as ourselves. And the idea behind that is they can focus on what they need to do. What do they need to do is get their end customers on a cloud journey in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Now, the cloud, software as a service, it's a different type of sale than we've used to in the past, where perhaps you had a reseller who would deliver a bunch of products in the form of shrink wrap software. Now customers can sit in front of their computer and order the software they want directly from a vendor. How does that affect the local channel? I imagine the impact must be quite big if you can go direct to some of these big vendors. And how can the local channel respond to this threat, if it is a threat?
Well, I think there's two ways to answer that. The first is our reseller partners have to absolutely make sure they offer a service. If their end customer is going online to Microsoft.com and seeing what Office 365, E3 and E5 cost if they pay with their credit card, and they're comparing your service to a website price, my words of advice to our partner is make sure you're offering something. Mm. If you're just going to be that person that is being checked on an online price for the price of a license, I think you need to be concerned. I think you need to reassess what it is that you do. And if you offer a service, you wouldn't be worried about what the direct price is, mm-hmm. would you? Because you'd have a very good idea that you're offering something unique. And we all know that it's a different experience buying online, right? You use your credit card, you get billed immediately. You don't get notified other than 30 days before you're going to get a renewal. There's no one to help you other than logging a support ticket, which is a different experience to talking to an individual. Mm. You get a ticket number, you go through the whole process. And I think one of the things about having a service provider, as in a relationship with your customer, is you can talk to them. And I think migration of cloud journeys are often seen as being slow because I just don't think there's communication. Mm. I think if the end customer and partner had a good working relationship and their cloud journey was clear in terms of a framework and a date. Sometimes this is a one-year journey for some companies, and sometimes it's a five-year journey. And I've seen that journey happen when people have migrated from Windows 7 to Windows 10, as an example. Some companies saw it as a five-year process, and now they're all on Windows 10, and they're running the full security stack of products that are part of Microsoft 365. Mm. And I think if these products are available from vendors, it makes it even more a priority, I believe, for resellers and partners to be very clear on what their service offering is. And if you're not clear on that, I think you're going to find yourself in a position where you just be compared on a license price to any vendor's direct website. Because between brands like VMware or McAfee or any security product, Veeam, these products are available, right?
Yeah.
On the website.
So how are resellers doing, generally speaking? And is Access able to help them if they are struggling to perhaps change their business models from one of being box droppers to one of more of a consulting role to their clients?
Sure. So in our advanced technologies business, where most of our software and our enterprise brands sit, we've got a whole group of pre-sales engineers. We've got some people that can do some security assessments and some risk assessments. And whilst I've read a lot of press about the fact that one can just go online and do that, and I think there's something intimate about having a discussion from an architecture point of view on how you want your business to look. I think that's different to just doing an assessment online and getting a view. Maybe that'll give you the current state of play, but it might not give you a view on what you want to do in the future. And I think what's encouraging about partners that want to work with us is we have a experience center in our offices. We've got racks and servers already configured and set up. And what we encourage partners to do is don't invest millions. We've done that. Come to us. We'll do a pre-sales proof of concept, if you like, with you. We'll test the software, not in your customer's environment, because there's always a risk with that, but use our environment. We'll work with you. We'll help you come up with a solution that works. And then you have the comfort that before you go live and deploy and spend thousands on really highly trained technical people, is let's just get it working here.
And we've seen, is this your cloud solution provider program then?
Well, not really. It's a service we offer
in our
security and networking business. And what it allows partners to do is work with us on that journey. And I mean, in return, we would ask that they stay with us on the journey, not just use us for our skills, because we know that happens a lot. Use us and then go and just get the price of the actual software and run that as a cutthroat experience. That's really not what we want. We want to work with partners from the beginning. And it's amazing how we don't want to be with partners only when the time is bad. We want to be with them throughout the year when it's good as well. And there's nothing more encouraging than seeing a company actually migrate to the cloud and see the operational and cost benefit of them actually taking the plunge to do it. Some of them are very forward thinking, and we've got end customers that have very quickly moved. We've got a partner that's got 30 people, woke up one day and said, right, that's it, everything moved to the cloud. And the people that work for him are under 35, so they embrace that change maybe faster than someone who's got an older demographic of people working for them. And they have not looked back, and that was 3 years ago. And they are now one of our biggest Azure consumed revenue partners we have in the country.
Okay.
And it's amazing because he didn't have to have any kind of foresight other than he wants to move his business.
Yeah.
And he went through the pain of having, how does he pay his people? How does he pay all these expensive services people? And taking the plunge 3 years later has proved to him that it's probably the most effective way he can get to market as a partner, because there's not a lot of time involved really in putting something in Azure, in the cloud. What used to take weeks or months to set up from a hardware point of view takes them a couple of days. And you at least give the end customer a view on what that experience could look like, because I think a lot of end customers go, but this is the interface I'm familiar with and this is the product I'm used to seeing. And what they've done is change the end customer's view that this cloud thing is not as terrifying as they might think it is. And they've moved over quicker than they even thought as organizations. And the cost saving just operationally has been the biggest trigger for them.
Yeah. I think there is a little bit of perception in the local IT market that with the arrival of these big international vendors that are putting down these data centers, that they're going to kind of erode, cannibalize the some of the revenues in the local IT market for the local IT companies. But it sounds to me, like, based on what you're saying, is that if companies approach this properly and maybe they have to make some changes to their own businesses, there's still opportunity to work with these companies, these big international companies, and still to make a profit here locally. And it's not necessarily going to be disaster for the local IT industry.
Yeah, I think there's a level of maturity of accepting cloud and what the impact it will make on your business. I think 5 years ago, cloud was quite terrifying to a lot of resellers that still did physical stuff and went to physical places and touched physical boxes. And I think what the cloud has brought is a maturity to a business that can scale faster than a small business owner would have expected. And I think that's encouraging for small business people that a long time ago, you know, you wouldn't dare to do that because the thought of having to do that, it was just hard work. And now in a couple of minutes, you can set up a website. In a couple of minutes, you don't even have to employ 30 people. You can employ two people, get up a website, get up and running. Not a big investment in outlay in terms of an operation. And you can very quickly position yourself as a company that you couldn't before. And I think the small partner that sees that as an opportunity will be the ones that will succeed.
Yeah. I suppose it's a bit of a mindset change for the end customers as well, because you know, I think people have gotten used to the idea of, well, we buy something and we own it. We need Microsoft licenses. Here's a whole rack of boxes with Microsoft disks in them.
Yes.
Now it's more of a, it's software has become more of a service.
Sure. And I think what's been nice to see with some of the technologies that Microsoft is incorporating in their products, and more stuff will be moving to Azure. And the nice thing about some of these products is you can still have the power over the people in terms of your administrator access that you have, and you can, it's still a role-based process, right?
Yeah,
so people seem to be misled by, you know, how much access will people have?
Yeah.
What could they see? Can they save stuff to a OneDrive account? Can they still get their mail? Are they saving apps and putting documents on unmanaged devices? And there's this panic. And I think if you just use the right products and you've got a good idea of what you want to do, products like Microsoft 365 that include enterprise mobility and security plus Intune gives you the ability to manage these devices in a way that you probably couldn't before. We still want the requirement to maybe work off-site and work from remote sites. I think that'll still be a user requirement. I think end customers' requirement to have the technology work wherever they are, on whatever device they have, I think that will continue. And I think if partners embrace the way that Microsoft, from a security point of view, still allows that, I think we'll have a lot more people moving to cloud every year and every month that we go forward.
Now, you've got something called Access Cloud. What is that exactly? How does it work?
So we have that is our provisioning and licensing portal for Microsoft CSP. So years ago, you would have that agreement and you would buy your product up front. And what we've done here is through CSP, it's a way to get your products in the cloud and you have the option to pay monthly or annually. So there's some flexibility in that. And I think the challenge for partners is working out if monthly or an annual billing frequency is better. So let me share with you what I mean by that. In our Africa territories, an annual price and paying once up front for 12 months is particularly attractive. But in South Africa, there's still the the opinion that the monthly is better. A lot of them do enjoy the monthly because they offer a monthly service fee for other services, and then when they just charge the cost of the license, they just, you know, add the price on, and then everything's good. So I think the flexibility of knowing if you must pay monthly or annually, I think, is attractive. The portal also offers full tenant access and full ownership of your end customer. We allow partners to go in and have a look. We allow the end customer to go in and have a look. And the idea behind that is it's self-service. So I think a long time ago, you would physically create a PO. The partner would email the PO to the distributor. The distributor would then place the order on the vendor. And so this would go on. And the beauty of having a self-service portal is you don't need us to do that. You go on, you log in, you add items to your basket, similar experience to some of our other e-tailers, and you check out. And the idea is that you don't need to be a expert in licensing to get that right. You have to be an IT manager or someone who knows what users need access to what, who knows if you need any kind of security or sophisticated anti-threat protection type stuff. And we offer our partners the opportunity to go through some detail on what those products are. It is hard for a partner. I think there's a lot of, I just want the cheapest Office 365 license, but then I want to have all of these things. Then when you realize that they've perhaps underscoped it. And we really help our partners choose the right product for the end customer the first time. I think Office 365 is 12 years old now. I think everyone knows what Office 365
12 years
is. Can you believe it? And I think the thing that happens now is how do we evolve the productivity experience for a user outside of Office 365. And what's exciting about Microsoft's new recently launched product called Microsoft 365 is it gives you a wider scope of security products. It gives you the opportunity to think outside of, if my business is only 300 users today, but in another year I want 300, is how do I cater for growth like that? Because we're always assuming that the software comes after the growth and then we all run around. And I think end customers will have a very good view on their business potential if they looked at it from that angle.
Before we wrap up, we started this discussion, we touched on the rest of Africa. How far down the line are some of the other markets in Africa? I mean, we always talk about Kenya and Nigeria and some of the key markets. How do they compare in terms of conversations they're having around this stuff?
Well, one thing I always like when you go to Kenya and you go to places like Egypt and you go to these countries is they have an absolute appetite for cloud for sure. They know they need to do it. They're just kind of not sure how to do that. And I think what we've learned after 30 years of business in Africa is a considerably huge contributor to the all-up revenue of the Alviva Group, is that it's hard, right? I mean, working in Africa is hard. Let's get real. You know, I think it's not for the faint-hearted. You not only have the language challenge of over 140 languages across the continent, is you have the challenge of how do we get paid for all of this? And I sound like a capitalist, right, as I say that, but we still have to...
Nothing wrong with capitalism.
We have to get paid. And I think one of the challenges across the continent is how flexible are you as a business to want to work with a country and be all in? So places like Angola and Mozambique is an example, and it's well known that it's very difficult to get currency out of them, right? And we have some interest in a lot of these countries. And why? Because we've got a really good relationship with our partners. Some of them have been with us 20, 15 years, and they are keen to work with us. But it's high risk as well. And we believe the rewards in Africa in terms of growth are worth taking that risk. As a company, we tend to make sure that we have all our ducks in a row. And how we do that is they talk to us. And what we didn't have as part of our sales cycle 5 years ago was a payment plan. And what we find is as we ending calendar year 2019, payments and how you're going to pay for it is part of our sales discussion. And that's interesting because it was not really about that. We got paid in dollars and everything was good. And I think the hardest thing for any country in Africa trying to operate in Africa is how do you manage that fluctuation? The South African rand, when our president opens his mouth, has a habit of going the wrong way. And I think what we try and do is help those partners that have those deals because we want them as well. So we have to figure out a mutual way that's beneficial for both the partner, the end customer, and for Axis to facilitate a cloud experience on the continent. It would be remiss of us to ignore that. I think our partners look to us as technology leaders, as technology guiders, and what do they do? And if they partnered with us, how could we help them? And there's no secret that it's tough to get money out of the continent. And we've chosen bets with some partners, and there's others that have felt that we should bet more on them. And we make a call and we say, right, let's work with you. And it's been encouraging that it takes years, right, to build that up.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, the first point of call is us, and can we help them? And look, we say no to people as well. I think we have an obligation to say no if we don't believe it's going to work. But it's always encouraging when they want to contact you because they know you'll help them through their journey. And they often committed to you for life then, because they don't believe they'll get the same sort of support. And for a lot of them, it's just giving them an extra 30 days to pay you.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like it's a big thing, but the cost of money working in Africa is, I don't want to make light of that, it's a risky business.
Mm. And is it mainly dollar-based?
It is. Mm. We do help our partners as much as we can. If they want to pay us in different currencies, we try our best to accommodate them. What we often do is, if there's smarter ways to do it, like, you know, have a shared bank account and then the partner and Access get paid simultaneously, then there's no confusion about who gets paid what. That's been quite attractive in some cases where the end customer has been happy to mm-hmm. work with us. It's not always a suggestion because obviously there's a lot of admin and stuff mm-hmm. that goes mm-hmm. around that. But letters of credit work well. You know, for a partner to give us a letter of credit from a different country is great, and the banks work with us and we work with them, and it's encouraging to see that there's appetite, whereas before you tend to kind of get told, you know, you're wasting your time in Africa. But let's be clear, it's hard work, right?
Yeah.
And if you're not going to knock on every door and you're not going to work with these partners from the days when you've started a process to the end, then the chances are they'll leave you along the way. But if you've been with them through the whole journey, they tend to stick with you. And we pride that in terms of our relationship with our partners as being one of the successes, the reasons for our success in Africa.
So Access made an acquisition, I think it was last year, of a company called Tricon Services, which is really part of your focus on the rest of the continent. Maybe tell us a bit about that.
So we went through an acquisition in 2018, and the idea behind that was giving us and our customers, our partners, access to regions that we didn't have before. So we have physical offices in some countries on the continent, but the idea with having contractors and service agents is they would be in countries like Ethiopia and DRC and Algeria and Tanzania, where we don't physically have an office. And the idea behind that is they're not an IBM seller. They are the services arm of Tricon UK, which was part of the original IBM brand, but it's really the technology implementation and the maintenance support services and projects. So we have the ability to make use of people in country for a big project that perhaps they wouldn't have had access to those skills before. And what we see a lot from that is the partner-to-partner marketing and the partner-to-partner discussion. So if there's a partner in one country that needs help in another and they have people based in that country, the chances are they'll make use of us because we have at least the scope and the people on the ground to get it done. It's been an exciting journey, and it's tough. I mean, I haven't got a view on the complexities involved in these countries until we got hold of that services business. And I think services is key. I think as a distributor, if you're not offering services of some kind and you're relying only on hardware and an exchange rate that's perhaps too volatile, you might have your demise sooner than you think. So our focus on services is very clear. Our focus on offering our brands across these countries that we wouldn't have seen before is also part of the growth plan that we have for 2020.
Yeah, I think until you've actually traveled extensively in Africa, you don't realize just how big and diverse it is.
And I mean, there's the language problem, and not only that, there's the woman, you know, man problem, and Cheryl runs our Africa business, and it's tough, because if you're not seen as, you know, it's quite patriarchal as well, so they see, you know, and perhaps she's able to get the insight into some of these customers that they wouldn't typically share before. And that's been a great progress to see, and it's been hard work. She's been with our company for 16 years, and Africa's been close to her heart, and she's seen companies that were small grow, and she's seen them grow with us. And it's encouraging for us because it will continue to be a big contribution to our business.
Always great to talk to you, Tracy. Tracy Maynard is executive at Access. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Duncan.